Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. This is Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. And here is where we talk with people and parents and professionals that work with struggling teens, young adults, and young children. Today we're going to talk about mental health diagnoses and why are they sometimes so darn scary. And I have Luke Stevens. Luke, good to have you here.
Thanks, Lon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Well, very good. You're a counselor there at Yellowstone Girls and Boys Ranch, and you're working off into some of the many things that the ranch has. It's not just a residential school. They do a lot of services for kids in need throughout Montana. But we're going to talk about mental health diagnoses. So why are mental health diagnoses scary? That's a question. You can take it from there.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something I think about often. There's so many different terms out there, I think, when it comes to a mental health diagnosis that scare people. And the only thing I can wrap my mind around to explain why it's scary, I think it's not like you go into a doctor and they say you have a cut on your knee, it's infected, this is what we need to do, take these pills for 30 days and you're good to go, and then it's over. With a mental health diagnosis, I think it's scary because it can sometimes and oftentimes become a lifelong struggle, and there's not always that instantaneous cure necessarily. So I think it becomes scary for people when they receive or hear about a mental health diagnosis.
Well, there's so much stigma, too, and I think bring into this some of the shootings, like one of the things that back in Connecticut, the shooting that occurred a couple of years ago. Immediately, people said he was diagnosed autism as if that was an explanation for it. And so those terms get in, and from the violence, autism had nothing to do with it, okay? Maybe he was. But I think that's part of the reason people associate a mental health diagnosis with a mass murderer, almost.
I would agree. I think there is just a level of, I want to say, ignorance, of not knowing what it necessarily is, and therefore it's automatically scary. But the terms alone don't necessarily make it easy to get to know them. I mean, we look at a term like serious emotional disturbance. That's scary.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a pretty scary term. And so automatically it kind of puts up that wall of defense, I think, for anybody encountering that. And so, breaking it down and helping a parent understand what it means when you're saying your child's going to be receiving an SED diagnosis, I think is very important and very fragile to do, for them to be able to be willing to accept help during that time.
I know somewhat in my first reaction, I'm not a therapist. I wasn't trained as a therapist. I come at this from an educator's perspective. When I first saw severely emotionally disturbed, SED, which is something that's used by the public schools, I look at that. What are they, a bunch of kids that are off drooling in the corner? That sounds pretty serious. And could you tell me what it really is, what it looks like in the field and working with kids that have had this diagnosis heaped on them?
Yeah, what is great about me being able to explain this to you, Lon, is that it ranges. You range from major behavior issues where you'd go, oh, that makes sense, why it would be an SED. We're talking behaviors like throwing chairs, cussing, you know, just disrupting a classroom environment. Two, we may have behaviors like when we're dealing with anxiety or depression, some of the more wallflower kids in the classroom, that they don't jump out as behavior concerns, but they have some significant emotional struggles that might be going on. So it's a wide range of different type of behaviors that are displayed, but it all falls underneath that category of that SED, which allows for us to be able to provide that treatment within the school setting.
So you might have a wallflower that's a little bit anxious and they wind up diagnosed with severely emotionally disturbed. Is that, could that happen?
It could. Like, underneath the category of SED or severely emotionally disturbed, you have the other diagnoses like anxiety, a generalized anxiety disorder. You have depression or major depression, dysthymia, all those other different diagnoses that fall underneath the SED criteria, and which in terms of behaviors, you know, somebody with anxiety is not going to display necessarily a severe amount of behavior like an oppositional defiant kid might.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, one of my experiences when I was a missions director I was called emotional a girls' boarding school at the time. But I enrolled a kid. He was a very, very mousy kid, by a perspective. He might have, a temper tantrum, but everybody does. But he seemed to be very mousy, very mild-mannered. But he had conduct disorder on it. And at one point, when he was having some troubles, I talked to a professor. Oh, no, we can't deal with conduct disorders. They were thinking of somebody that was just like you talked about earlier, throwing chairs and violent outbursts
right.
and busting in walls. Well, yeah, well, that's one of the reasons conduct disorder is not very well respected, I don't think.
I would agree. I think it's unfortunate when some of those labels get mislabeled on two kids, because I oftentimes see anxiety especially and ADHD become mislabeled, or even conduct disorder and an anxiety disorder will oftentimes become mislabeled, and it can lead to a situation like you described where people see the label and are afraid of what they might be encountering mm-hmm. when they start to meet a kid. So it can be unfortunate when it's not labeled correctly.
Let's talk about another thing. What is a label? Because that's sort of what, from this perspective, we're looking at diagnoses as a label. Now, that's not quite fair. That's just
sure.
one perspective. But we're looking at as labels. And so what does a label like that do to a kid? If a kid all of a sudden says, well, you're severely emotionally disturbed, what does that mm-hmm. do to the kid?
What does it do for the kid?
Yeah.
I think that if they're given the label, they're usually probably being referred to some sort of a service. So if that means that they're being referred for a special education service, they might qualify underneath an other health impaired, which would maybe require them to have some sort of a mental health diagnosis like ADHD, mm-hmm. anxiety, depression, any of those. So they could be trying to qualify for something along those lines, which would be helping them with their education. Or they could be qualifying for a program like the program that I run out of the school that provides specifically mental health services for kids that have those SED diagnoses. So that would be kind of what would happen, I guess, when a kid would receive that label, or if they were to encounter that label, that's what would happen with it.
Okay, that would be happening around them. What I was thinking of as a kid, because, oh, I can't help it, I'm ADD. I've heard that one.
Oh, I see what you mean. So what's the kid's given,
you're severely emotionally disturbed. So what does it do
sure.
to the kid's thinking in your experience?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. You know, honestly, I see it as, and I've taken it from the perspective of I'm educating a kid about what's going on. So if it is ADHD, for example, what is it that's happening? You know, you're having a hard time staying focused and you're distracted. The kids are then taking that back with them and saying, you know what, I have ADD, but I'm not using it as an excuse. I need to use A, B, and C coping skills to keep myself on task.
Yeah, okay, that's the responsible way to handle it. It
that
goes the other
awesome.
Way.
Sometimes I see that. Now, the other way I see it is I do see the kids twisting that, and it's like, oh, you know, I just didn't have my pill today.
So it's not my fault. Not my fault.
Doesn't mean that it's okay that we can be acting this way. It means we got to try a little harder. We got to use our coping skills that we might have to come up with in the moment. So I do see sometimes it becoming a little bit of a crutch for the kids or an excuse, but I think that I'm working with a pretty young age range, so they're kind of in the moment just kind of exploring what it means, I think, too, for themselves.
Okay. Well, let's speculate a little bit about the public. Why is it so scary? You know, there's some of these shootings, they come up with a diagnosis of the kid and as if that explains something. But why do people freak out? You know, if they say, if you go to a medical doctor and told you have a broken leg, okay, you deal with it. If you go to
right.
a psychiatrist and are told you have anxiety, you might freak out. Or
yeah.
or say, okay, I'm going to give up trying or something. So why is this so scary?
You know, I think a couple of things come to my mind. One, I think of the demographics of especially the region of Montana, and I think that there is this mentality of, you know, you pull yourself up from your bootstraps, old mentality, where when it comes to a mental health diagnosis, you know, we don't need that. We can take care of ourselves. And so it's kind of pushed to the sidelines as, what? We don't need help with that. Are you bleeding? No, then you're fine. So I think that there's that piece with the demographic error, you know, where we're at. But I think, too, it is, in general, it's something that you can't see. We can't control.
Yeah.
It's not like a broken leg. It's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow, so to speak, because you can't just ABC fix it. There's a lot of, different tools and techniques out there for different diagnoses, whether that's med management or just psychotherapy or a hybrid of both. And so I think it can become very scary because of that, too.
Okay. Well, we've about run out of time. We try to keep this, I try to keep this about 10 minutes. But could you wrap up by, if somebody wanted to talk more about this or more about Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch and the services that it provides, how would they get a hold of you? Phone
sure.
number,
well, we have
email?
We have our website, and I'll give you that, and then I'll also give you our toll-free number. The website is YBGR, so YBGR.org. Mm-hmm. And then the phone number that you could call is a toll-free number. It's 1-800-726-6755. And that would be the best way to get a hold of somebody from the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch.
Okay, that's a way to find out about this. It's in Billings, Montana, which is over, and well, I consider it eastern Montana. Isn't it actually more central part of Montana?
Yeah, I think I'd consider it central. It's kind of eastern, though.
Well, it's eastern for me. I'm from North Idaho, and I drive through there periodically.
There you go. It's pretty eastern in comparison to Idaho, for sure.
That's right. Okay, well, I've been talking with Luke Stevens. He's a counselor for the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch and working particularly in a public school, helping those kids and on assignment. This is some of the things that the Yellowstone Girls and Boys Ranch does. Well, and it's May 6th, 2015, incidentally. And Luke, thank you very much. It's been good talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lon. Have a good day.
You too.